Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is November 20th, 2016, and this is episode 125, Tragic Kingdom, the rise and fall of Roller Coaster Tycoon.
Cornfields of popcorn have yet to spring open.
Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org! Video game podcast.
This week, Slagkick is leading a discussion about the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise. So, buckle in, lower your
safety bars. Hang on to your hats and glasses, because this year is going to be a wild ride.
Get ready for that. But first, we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Before I throw it over to Slaggy, though, I do want to make a note. We are specifically this week trying to accentuate the positive. Since recording our last episode, there has been something of a tectonic shift in the politics of the country in which we record. I'm attempting to talk around a fairly complex issue by simply saying there's a whole lot of negativity out there right now. There's a whole lot of fear and uncertainty, and we do not want to contribute to that. So you might notice, you know, we're not too big on like the doom and glooms and controversials this week. That is a choice for this episode. It is not a fundamental shift in our aim for the show. That having been said, hopefully we can help you lighten your day, and let's have a good time and get started. Slaggy?
So following up on our previous discussion where we were reporting that the Wii U was rumored to be ending production, and then Nintendo said that that wasn't true, it is in fact true. Nintendo of Japan's website has noted that production on the two Wii U bundles that are sold in the country is ending soon. These are the premium 32GB set, and then the Splatoon set that comes with the game digitally, and the Kali and Marie amiibo.
Indeed.
There has not been an exact end date for production announced yet, and it also is just specific to Japan, but I think it's pretty clear that, you know, whatever's in stock at stores is probably going to be all that there's going to be. So if you are wanting this underappreciated gem of a console, probably would be wise to pick it up while you still can.
Indeed. We also have an update here on Persona 5's North American release, and that is that it will no longer be making its February 14th, 2017 release date as planned. It is now going to be releasing on April 4th, 2017. The good news is, in order to sort of make up for the fact that the game is being delayed further due to localization challenges, we are going to be getting a free download to access Japanese voiceovers for the game.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. You know, I'm a big fan of playing games in the original language like that, so I'm stoked. I'm happy about it. Obviously, major bummer that P5 is getting delayed, but it's not like we don't have so many games to be playing in that time span.
Right, and the Persona games are usually very well localized, so I think the extra time that they need to take for it, you know, I'd rather have it be a polished game as much as it can be.
Excellent. We also have word here on the newest character announced for Dissidia Final Fantasy in Arcade. You may recall, Slaggy and I took our guesses at what character would be announced a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, it turns out that the truth is more boring than fiction. We have Sephiroth coming to Dissidia, and that's a thing that's happening.
I mean, I guess it just seems like the obvious choice. You know, that's my thing.
Yeah. Well, it's super obvious, and it's so obvious that I actually had thought he had been in the game already, so...
Oops.
Right? We also have word here from EA Games, who has said that they will be supporting the Nintendo Switch, including bringing one of its quote-unquote bigger games to the platform.
Mass Effect.
And, you know, I obviously, for my own edification, would vastly prefer Mass Effect to anything else. I would love it. I'd totally play it, be super into it. But it's hard for me not to think of, like, what would help the Nintendo Switch the most.
I
think that would be probably, like, FIFA or Madden.
Oh.
Yeah, those games, you know, they don't matter much to me or most of the people that I speak to, but it cannot be denied there's some of the biggest games in EA's stable, so...
That's true. We always kind of tune out during that part of their E3 press conference.
Right? We also have word here of some upcoming free DLC to the upcoming SD Gundam G Generation Genesis, which is releasing in Japan and Asia territories on November 22nd.
Oh, that's soon by the time you are hearing this.
Indeed. Indeed, and you may recall, of course, that the Asia release of the game will have a full English localization, so not a whole lot of reason not to hop on this if you're interested.
North America is getting some $100 new Nintendo 3DS systems starting on November 25th. One is black, one is white, and they are of the design that kind of has like the different Mario icons. They're really, really cool faceplates, and so these will be retailing for $99.99. It is the regular sized new Nintendo 3DS, so if you are not an XL person, it's a pretty good time to jump in.
Yeah, and you know, something I think is really cool, these are debuting on Black Friday, but as I understand it, these are not like doorbuster deals. They're not exclusive to any one
right.
retailer. If you want to hop on Amazon or whatever and try to nab one or two of these guys, you're going to be able to do that.
And I was actually looking at new 3DS cover plates because I've been, you know, in the mood to switch up my ones that came with them, which were the Happy Home Designer. And I actually saw this on their site. So
awesome. We also have word here that Akuma, fan favorite character of the Street Fighter universe, is going to be added to Street Fighter V.
That's awesome.
Indeed. He's going to be playable to event goers at the PlayStation Experience in Anaheim in early December. We do not yet have a release date for Akuma, but I believe we will probably have one, you know, after the PlayStation Experience.
All right. Dissidia Final Fantasy Opera Omnia has been delayed to early 2017 for some bug fixing.
Boo. This is the upcoming Square Enix smartphone game based on Dissidia Final Fantasy.
Man, there are so many Final Fantasy smartphone games these days. I was just looking at the list the other day, and I'm like, wow, there are so many now.
The thing is, a lot of them are really good.
Yeah, they are.
So, anyway, we also have for you word that Danganronpa, another episode, Ultra Despair Girls, is also getting a PS4 port. We've talked in previous weeks about the other Danganronpa PS4 ports, so it's exciting that, you know, Ultra Despair Girls will be coming as well. That should be available digitally and physically in North America and Europe in summer 2017.
Yeah, and from these screenshots, I'm like, it looks like they did a really good job. I mean, I don't know how much remastering, etc. they did, but I mean, like, it looks pretty good.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, well, we have some other release date news for you. DJ Max Respect has been delayed to July 2017. It was previously expected to be releasing in January of 2017. That is a South Korea and Asian release for the PS4. We also have Digimon World Next Order releasing in North America on January 31st. Hatsune Miku Project Diva Future Tone will be releasing in North America on January 10th. This is going to be a digital only release, just like it was in Japan, and it will have two song packs that will be available for $29.99 each, or you can buy them in a bundle for $53.99. With both bundles, you end up with the vast majority of songs from all of the Miku games. Overall, there's something like 224 songs.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is going to be a real treat for all of you fellow Miku fans out there. We also have word that Super Mario Run will be releasing for iOS devices on December 15th.
You got me excited there when you said Super Nintendo. I thought you were going to say Super Nintendo Mini.
Sadly not. Something really interesting. The full game is going to cost $9.99, which in the smartphone world is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
But there will be like the free-to-play modes, which will quote-unquote give players a taste of all three modes. So that's something to look forward to. I'm obviously in at whatever price. I love Mario games, and I'm really excited for Mario Run. We also have word that Dragon Ball Fusions, which was supposed to be releasing on December 13th in North America, is now releasing 3 weeks earlier, so it'll be releasing this week on November 22nd.
Oh, that's awesome.
You may recall, Dragon Ball Fusions is the JRPG focused on the Dragon Ball Fusion technique, creating new characters and creating new possibilities for your party of Dragon Ball characters.
And how do they do it? Let's say it 1, 2, 3.
Fusion! Ha! We also have Attack on Titan.
This fused into Spike Kick.
It's, of course, the new 3DS visual novel will be releasing on March 30th, 2017 in Japan. Fairy Fencer F Dark, I'm sorry, Advent Dark Force will be releasing in North America on Steam for PC in summer of 2017. Mary Skelter Nightmares will be coming out on Vita in North America in summer 2017. Hakuoki Kyoto Winds will be releasing on Vita in spring of 2017 in North America. And Black Rose Valkyrie will be released in North America as Dark Rose Valkyrie in spring of 2017. This is a PS4 RPG by Idea Factory. Obviously, just by who makes it, you probably know if this is for you or not. Saggy, anything else?
Nope, I think it's time for some
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
All right, Slaggy, you want to kick this off?
Yeah, so Nipponichi Software America is bringing over Operation Babel New Tokyo Legacy to Vita and PC in the spring of 2017. Yes, you heard that right. For Vita and PC. Or should I say for Vita and PC. this is also going to be accompanied-ish by the fact that Operation Abyss New Tokyo Legacy is headed to Steam.
Excellent. And New Tokyo Legacy Operation Abyss will be releasing in early 2017. So I know there are a lot of fans of this game out there. For those of you who have been interested but maybe don't have a PS Vita, now's your time to hop in.
Oh, at this point, nobody really has a Vita. Poor little thing.
I think that has always been true. We also have word here that the Japanese release Dynasty Warriors Eketsuden will be releasing in North America as Dynasty Warriors Godseekers. This is actually more of like a strategy RPG take on the Musou formula. And it's going to be available as a digital release on January 31st and February 1st in North America and Europe, respectively. Cladun Returns, This Is Sengoku, will be releasing in North America in 2017. This is really exciting to me because this is one of those games that, like, when it was first announced, I kind of thought we wouldn't get, and we are getting it. I'm really excited. I love these Cladun games, and super stoked for what this is going to be like.
Are you going to get the limited edition with the little pixel sword?
I kind of want to.
So cute. Nintendo has registered a trademark for Wave Race in Europe.
Excellent. So this is really exciting because it might mean more Wave Race. you know, I'm a big fan of the Wave Race series. I've talked about that here a lot on the show. I just really dig Wave Race, and the idea that Nintendo could be doing something with it, like anything, is just very exciting to me. I have my fingers crossed that we're going to see a revival of the series on the Switch. Slaggy, your thoughts?
Oh, that would be great.
All right, that was a thought.
It would be great if we got it on the Switch. I agree. I can't speculate. This isn't rumor has it, so.
We also have Bravely Default Fairies Effect announced. This is going to be a smartphone RPG. You know, we do have a little trailer for it now. It has a closed beta. It looks cute. It does look almost like a real Bravely Default game, just with some of, like, the smartphone mobile social trappings brought in.
But the thing is that, you know, I actually thought that there were already some mobile social sort of trappings in the original Bravely Default.
Well, exactly. That's why sort of the early footage from the closed beta or whatever actually looks promising to me. Like, I'm not out. Like, I could see this working out really well. We also have word here that Monster Hunter Stories will be getting a puzzle game release for smartphone based on the anime Monster Hunter Stories, which is itself based on the 3DS game Monster Hunter Stories. Either way, it looks super cute. It's going to be like a slidey blocky type puzzler using like character faces and monster faces from the Monster Hunter games. It looks really cute. I'm really excited
really cute.
For this.
A new Neo Kun game has been announced for the PS4. This is Downtown Ranto Koshin Kyoku Kachinuki Kakuto SP. And it is going to be supported in its development by the director of Blaze Blue, Ryohei Endo.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm really excited about this. You know, I like the Kunio-kun games a lot. I think most of us do. And, you know, the Arc System Works folks have been really great at, like, nurturing the brand and sort of bringing it back from the brink of irrelevancy. So I'm really interested in this take. I'm really excited, and I really can't wait.
Yeah, it's a winter release. I'm guessing maybe early Q1 2017 is my guess.
Yeah, and that's for the Japanese release, which we will I'll probably download, and we will talk about here on the show, because it looks like it will have some multiplayer fun.
Here's one that's up your alley.
Yeah, indeed. So a group of intrepid Rockman fans, or Mega Man, obviously, have found sort of one of the holy grails of the Mega Man gaming world. This is a early ROM prototype of Mega Man X3. And the interesting thing here is they actually, they had to hack it a bit in order to get it playable, but they did that. So it's now a playable ROM of an early prototype version of Mega Man X3. This specific build comes from about 4 months before the game actually released. There are a lot of graphical differences. A lot of the super lush, gorgeous stage backgrounds appear different. Some of the enemy robot masters have fairly different designs. It's definitely a really fascinating piece for those of you who are interested in the history of the Mega Man series. I definitely recommend you check it out.
That's awesome.
And part of why this was such a hot topic is that all of the box art, like screenshots on the back of the box, were taken from this build of this prototype.
So you're like, where was this? Where was this? Where was this?
Well, absolutely. In fact, there was a gate in Blast Hornet stage, which was removed from the final game, but is present in those screenshots on the box. So a lot of people were like, you know, what's going on here? Like, where, you know, back in the day, like, where is this?
Like, oh, it's a secret part of the level.
Well, nah. Exactly, you know, because the Rockman X games have some really obtuse, obscure secrets hidden in them. Like, you know, that Hadouken in Mega Man X, where you literally have to, like, go to this rando platform, like, 5 times in a row that nobody would ever figure that out on their own.
Oh, Mega Man X.
So, yeah, a lot of people thought that, like, oh, this must be like some hidden something or another that we have just literally never found. Well, now we have the answer. We have the build in which it appeared. We know. We can see it and move on.
And our last news bit here is that Swapdoodle is now available for North American and European 3DSs. This is a iteration of Swapnote, but lets you purchase add-ons. So you can kind of basically start with the normal Swapdoodle, but then you can buy more functions, which could be like more doodles per note, boosting your note storage, increasing the colors and stationaries. This, however, does not feature any photo functionality. You might remember Swapnote was disabled for spot pass stuff because of inappropriate 3D photos. But my thing is, aren't people going to still draw dongs?
Yeah, well, I mean, are little dong doodles really as offensive, do you think, as dick pics?
I mean, I don't know.
I said pics, not pigs. Calm down.
Whoa. But yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. Like, there's actually going to be doodle lessons. So you can, there's an example on this Kotaku article about how to doodle Samus.
Cute. I'm excited. Plus, it's nice to see my girl Nikki coming back.
Oh, yeah, we missed her.
Right? It was kind of sad. Like, Nikki was only from Swapnote, and then they deleted it. It was like, wow, this Nintendo character doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But she's back. Anyway, I'm excited about this. I love little programs like this, so I'm stoked.
Time to swap doodle. Well, not actually time to swap doodle. It's time to
visit the Culture Club.
It is.
So this first piece of news that we have for the Culture Club is sort of a follow-up from Chris Metzen on why he's leaving Blizzard. You know, it was a big deal a few months back when he had announced that he was leaving Blizzard in September. A lot of us were really shocked by, you know, what was going on. And so it's sort of interesting to see this interview with him. You know, Kotaku really went in depth. This is really a great piece, but he basically talks about the fact that, you know, over time he started to develop some anxiety problems to the point that he was having like panic attacks. And, you know, obviously, when you look at it in that light, you know, a lot of us were wondering what was going on with Chris Metzen, you know, what's really going on. It's good to hear from him, even though obviously it's very sad that he was experiencing panic attacks and anxiety. But, you know, it's good to hear that he identified this problem in his life, you know, all this work stress and everything, and that he's making the change to spend more time with his family and, you know, hopefully take care of himself.
Yeah. I mean, he's worked really hard for really long since he was 19. I mean, he just like poured himself into Blizzard and, you know, transformed the company. So he deserves some rest.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have a follow-up here on the continuing mystery. I almost said continuing sequel, but the continuing mystery of the Frog Fractions sequel. We now know that, you know, there has been a alternate reality game going on across a bunch of indie games on Steam. They were all featuring like these symbols that would match up, but they wouldn't be identical, but they were all like clearly connected, like 19 different indie games that are otherwise seemingly unrelated. And what they have discovered is that this ongoing, what appears to be an alternate reality game, is in fact connected to Frog Fractions 2. We don't yet know what it means. We don't yet know if Frog Fractions 2 is an actual video game that we might play at some point, but at least things are now moving forward with regard to the Frog Fractions sequel.
That's amazing. This one is really funny. There is a side quest in Watch Dogs 2, which has been, you know, pretty well received so far. This takes place in a fictional version of San Francisco, so props to the Bay Area. And of course, there is a Ubisoft office in San Francisco, and you can actually, I guess it's the hacking comes across at the Stanford University in game, but you can hack into a phone call about a Ubisoft leak. So it's kind of poking fun at, you know, the fact that Ubisoft's had like a bunch of leaks for their Assassin's Creed titles and such, and the side quest is actually called Ubi Stolen. And you have to actually go to Ubisoft San Francisco and hack into their network and get a watermarked E3 trailer.
Well, and so there's a couple of cute things about this. Of course, one of them is that they specifically reference the events of Kotaku reporting on the Unity Syndicate and Osiris Assassin's Creed leaks. And Osiris, I mean, there's still some question if that is Assassin's Creed related or not, but it's really interesting that it gets like specifically called out in game. I think that's super cute.
I agree. And I have a lot of... I gotta give a lot of props to Ubisoft I'm always Ubisoft. Like, I'm, even though in the in-game footage they say Ubisoft and they always say Ubisoft, I don't know.
I'm just gonna continue saying Ubi. I don't care.
So yeah, but props to Ubisoft for having a good sense of humor.
Well, and something else that's really exciting is the E3 trailer that you have to hack that Slaggy had referenced. That is a sci-fi trailer for what appears to be a game really in development. So I think that is just a really cool way to start early promotion and marketing of a game. Like, real forward-thinking stuff out of Ubi. You know, this game, Watch Dogs 2, surprisingly, has gotten nothing but good press. And, you know, the more I see of stuff like this, the more I really want to play it. I have put off buying it and picking it up and playing it due to my unfortunate experience paying full price for the first game. But, you know, the more I hear, the more interested I am. I know that Anthony over at Nintendo Love Fest is a big fan, and you know he has good taste. So yeah, definitely getting interested in Watch Dogs 2.
Yeah, and I've loved seeing everyone going and decking out their character in rainbow clothing and walking around the Castro. Like, for me, that's gonna be something that I'm gonna really enjoy, is just seeing, because you know.
Just having gay shit in a AAA release is like,
well, I was also
cool
saying, and San Francisco. I mean, I guess we kind of had GTA San Andreas ish, right? But I mean, not nearly quite what I've seen from the level of detail in Watch Dogs 2. So anyway,
and that's more of a Los Angeles thing, anyway, in my experience.
Yeah, there was one. Wasn't there part that was kind of San Francisco ish?
It might have been. I've never been able to get more than like 5 hours into one of those games without losing interest.
Yeah, although they did just put light cycles into GT Online, so
cool.
I care.
All right, so this last one, speaking of Ubisoft, is, I mean, I feel bad about it, but I kind of also have to giggle because the great news is that Assassin's Creed 2 has been remastered for Xbox One. Well, I mean, I guess, and there's maybe it's not great news because although a lot of the visuals of the world look amazing and beautiful, some of the character models did not have a similar effect. They look very Uncanny Valley.
I wouldn't even say Uncanny Valley. Like, this is just straight up like some Nintendo 64 era modeling. I mean, I'm sure the actual modeling isn't. It's just something about it looks ridiculous. Like, this looks very bad.
Yeah, this was the full trilogy that got remastered, right?
The Ezio trilogy, yeah. And this was a release for Xbox One and PS4. I do not know if the PS4 version looks like this.
Yeah, this Kotaku article specifically is calling out the Xbox One.
Yeah, and there are articles on this all over the place on all of the big sites because it's just such a catastrophe.
Yeah, like some of these character models are just like, what? Which is a shame because I have a very, very strong fondness for the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy. I think all of them are definitely worthwhile. And I mean, I'll probably pick it up at some point. Maybe we'll get a patch. Maybe we'll get some character model patches or something.
I certainly hope.
Hey, at least it's not Unity with the eyes bugging out of the head.
Oh, dude, right?
That's the stuff of nightmares.
Indeed. All right, well, we do have a smash hit here tonight as well, and after that, we're going to get to our discussion. I will take this smash hit, Slaggy, even though I know you would love to, so that you can get ready for this discussion.
Yeah, this one is a really fun one, though, and the funny thing is that I was going to recommend it to you, and then I saw you already had it on the show roll.
Yeah, this one is by our girl, Gita Jackson. We're huge fans of her work. And this is Inside the Taboo World of Teen Pregnancy in The Sims. Now, the reason why this to me is a smash hit is first off that it's a pretty wacky subject that Gita still doesn't treat condescendingly, which I thought was, you know, really great to take this sort of very strange thing that people are doing online with The Sims and to look at it fairly and to talk about it for people who wouldn't even think about this. And basically, there's a whole subculture of people that, hack their Sims installs to allow teen girls to get pregnant and then, you know, end up role-playing through these fictional pregnancies. This is something that to me is very strange. I don't understand it, but reading this piece, it sort of helped me get what these people get out of it. And I found it very interesting. I was like riveted to my screen while I was reading this article, which to me is a sign of, you know, they were able to do that without being negative on anyone else. That to me is a sign of a good piece of games writing.
Right. And The Sims has so much interesting things going on in the fandom. That, like, you know, people get really into it. And I mean, Sims music videos, YouTube videos. I mean, so this is just, it's just wild. And, it's interesting what types of emergent gameplay come out of specifically The Sims.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, moving forward, Slaggy, I believe you have a show to run.
Yeah, so Captain Spike is letting me handle the SS Buoy this week as we sail into theme parks. Okay, I could have done better with that. But anyway, the reason I wanted to talk about Roller Coaster Tycoon and the kind of genre of theme park simulation is that these games are kind of in the middle of a revival of sorts, or maybe the more accurate way to describe it is a hopeful revival. So the genre had a real huge surge in popularity in the late 1990s and early 2000s, mostly dominated by the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise. And then it all but disappeared until some recent attempts to bring it back. And this has kind of culminated in three big revivals that kind of have taken different spins on the genre. There was the indie game Parkitect, which was released in early access earlier this year, and that had come from an August 2014 Kickstarter campaign that was very successful. And funny enough, that Kickstarter had launched shortly after the announcement of Roller Coaster Tycoon World from Atari, which was at Gamescom 2014, and just a few months before January 2015's announcement of Planet Coaster, which, you know, kind of officially got its unveiling at the PC Gaming Show at E3 2015. And there's a very interesting sort of intermingling history between Planet Coaster and Roller Coaster Tycoon World, and I thought it was a very interesting sort of story to look at, because Roller Coaster Tycoon World just came out last Wednesday. It was pushed from early access into full release last Wednesday. A lot of people feel that that was very premature, and it was just so happened to be the day before Planet Coaster was set to launch, which was last Thursday. So I'd really like to take a look today at each of the main games in the series, as well as, you know, kind of this genre that was once great and hopefully will be great again. And for the ones that we've played, you know, we're going to be sharing our own experiences. I know Captain Spikes had some fun with a good handful of these games as well. We both love theme parks and roller coasters ourselves, so.
Sure do.
We're just really looking forward to diving in here. I do have a full disclosure that I have not played a lot of the more recent games in the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise specifically. As we're going to talk about, there's been some ups and downs, kind of very much like a roller coaster has its ups and downs. And So, you know, a lot of these more recent ones in the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise itself have been, you know, very poorly received by the public. And, you know, there's some reasons for it. So we kind of wanted to look at the history and then where the genre is now.
Yeah, I tried to play Roller Coaster Tycoon 4 Mobile. It was not.
Oh, yeah.
It really was a rough spot.
Yeah.
Say that.
So for those of you who have never played any of these games, these games are simulation games where you get to control an amusement park. A lot of them involve reaching certain goals, like improving park value, bringing in a certain number of guests, increasing the park rating. A lot of these games have different scenarios where they'll say, oh, you need to build 10 coasters with an excitement rating of 5.0 or higher, or pay back a loan. So there's a lot of really fun micromanagement things to do. You have staff to keep track of. You have to keep track of your guests' happiness. And, like, I mean, really, but the most fun part of it is building a theme park. And this involves, you know, various rides like thrill rides and gentle rides and water rides, but also, of course, coasters. And you can do pre-built coasters or design your own. I mean, there's a lot of people who the main appeal for them, I know, like a buddy who introduced me to the Roller Coaster Tycoon games, he was all about designing his own custom coasters. And I believe you always had a fun time with that, right, Spike?
Oh, absolutely.
And for me, it's more about the fantasy of building and theming a park, which, I mean, I'm sure those of people who know me and how much I love theming and, like, you know, worlds and creating worlds and stuff, that's not a surprise. So, I mean, these games are all about, you know, kind of bringing your theme park dreams to life and just the management of it. So as far as Roller Coaster Tycoon specifically, it was not the first roller coaster game, which we'll talk about the most notable earliest one at the end of our discussion here. But Roller Coaster Tycoon specifically came from the mind of Chris Sawyer. He is a Scottish gentleman who first entered the game industry in 1983 and did a lot of work on converting Amiga games into DOS. He actually had his first big success in the form of Transport Tycoon, which was released by MicroProse. You might remember MicroProse as the original home of the Civilization games before MicroProse kind of, like, there's a lot of changing of hands of a lot of these companies that will kind of track throughout the development of the various Tycoon games. So when he was looking at making a sequel to Transport Tycoon, he started to get interested in roller coasters. So he had this project called White Knuckle that eventually became Roller Coaster Tycoon. This was released for Microsoft Windows on March 31st, 1999. It actually later got a port to the Xbox game console that I never actually played that port, but that's interesting. So the game was pretty much developed solely by Chris Sawyer and was published by MicroProse, which very soon around that time became Hasbro Interactive, which Hasbro, the toy division, or the toy company, company had purchased MicroProse. So, like, a lot of the early games will say, you know, Hasbro Interactive. It ended up receiving two expansion packs, added attractions, which was actually called Corkscrew Follies over here in the U.S. in 1999, and Loopy Landscapes in 2000. And these added just, you know, more types of coasters and more scenarios and such. So, something that was really funny that I didn't actually know until I was researching for this episode is that Chris Sawyer actually hated roller coasters, and then...
What?
Yeah, he actually used to hate them, like, in, like, I don't know if he was afraid of them, but he hated them. So, somehow when he was working on these, what was going to be a sequel to Transport Tycoon, he kind of gave himself an excuse. He decided to make Roller Coaster Tycoon as a way to kind of, I guess, give him an excuse to get over his hatred of roller coasters. And then he ended up becoming obsessed with them. So it came out of, like, a real newfound love of roller coasters. And he wrote most of the code in assembly language over the course of 2 years. And it ended up just being, you know, he'd had success with Transport Tycoon, but Roller Coaster Tycoon was just hugely successful. I mean, I don't know, like, hugely successful, but I mean, in the world of sim games and, you know, the tycoon games, it was really popular.
Yeah.
There's still a huge devoted fan base, lots of people who love these games. And so this original game had 22 scenarios that, you know, you had 5 to start with and it would unlock the different scenarios. And this first one did not have a sandbox mode, which, you know, it kind of allows you to just go wild. There was a final one called Mega Park, which had the objective, have fun. So it was closest thing that it had to a sandbox mode. So as I mentioned, I got into this game with a childhood buddy of mine. This would have been around my freshman year of high school. He, like, had a dream of being a roller coaster designer and, you know, actually ended up going to college to pursue that. From last time I talked to him, it wasn't going so well for him, unfortunately. But, you know, I credit him for getting me into this game. And like I said, he was all about, like, making, like, the wildest coasters and stuff. But for me, it was just about, you know, the joy of running a theme park. And I had a lot of fun. You know, these games definitely do show their age if you go back to play them. But, you know, they're just really, it's very cute. There's, you know, it's played in an isometric view. And just, you know, you can put all the rides, the shops, the, and the scenery. And it's just really, really cute. And as someone who really loves theme parks, but interestingly, not a huge sim player at that time. Like, this was kind of one of the first big simulation games that I really got into in a big way. Captain Spike, what was your experience with the original Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Mostly not entirely positive. I felt like, you know, I had come from theme park myself, which I played before I played Roller Coaster Tycoon. And so I found Roller Coaster Tycoon to be less user-friendly, less intuitive. Just overall, I felt like it had less personality.
That's interesting.
So I actually, for me, I didn't really get super into a Roller Coaster Tycoon game until Roller Coaster Tycoon 2.
Yeah.
But that first one, for me, was a rough spot. Even now, like, I've gone back and replayed 2 and 3, but I've never gone back and replayed that first one.
Yeah, and I agree. One, like, there was so much that they improved in 2 and 3 that one is kind of, like, you know, just interesting for historical purposes.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, so Roller Coaster Tycoon was released on October 15th, 2002. Once again, developed by Chris Sawyer, this time published by Infogrames, who and this is where the history and, like, you know, who owns the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise and IP now is, like, a interesting story. So Infogrames had bought out Hasbro Interactive, and we will talk about the next chapter of that with Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. So Hasbro Interactive had bought MicroProse, and now Infogrames had bought out Hasbro Interactive. So Roller Coaster Tycoon had 2 expansion packs as well. I thought these were a little bit more memorable expansion packs because there was Wacky Worlds and Time Twister. Wacky Worlds kind of had, like, different locales around the world, and Time Twister had different eras. So there was, like, the 20s, the 60s, and I think there was a lot of fun for the theming, which I know is huge for me. And so those were both in 2003. So what happened is that Chris Sawyer was going to finally get to that Transport Tycoon sequel, but then was like, no, I'm going to do Roller Coaster Tycoon 2. Side note, he did finally release Chris Sawyer's Locomotion in 2004. One of the big improvements was that Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 allowed you to build building structures, so it really kind of allowed you to kind of, you know, make little buildings in some of the scenarios. You have, like, little farms, or you could have one that was in Time Twisters that was in the middle of a factory. There's an Alcatraz one. And so it just really made it, you know, more able to come to life and more creative. You know, you were able to build rides more easily underground, and you could also remove scenery, like, multiple scenery at a time. And one of the most fun things for me was the scenario editor. Of course, I had no friends at that point, really, so I would just make scenarios, like, for my sister to play or whatever, but I think that was really cool that you could, you know, create your own scenario. Like, that was just a huge jump. Something else that was really cool is that there was a separate part of the game that you could just design roller coasters in, you know, and then save the blueprints. And it had a licensing deal with Six Flags, so there were actually scenarios based on some of the different Six Flags parks, including Magic Mountain down in SoCal. And so some of these famous rides from Six Flags could actually be put into other parks. So I thought that was really cool. And, you know, something that, like, you know, especially starting with 3, the fan community for these games, people love to recreate their own parks. Or, I mean, not their own parks, like real-world parks. And so the fact that you could actually go and see Magic Mountain recreated in-game, I thought that was really cool. And so these 2 expansion packs is where we get a new member in the Roller Coaster Tycoon story, and that's Frontier Developments. They are a British studio from Cambridge, and you might be familiar with them from the Elite Dangerous series in recent years. They were involved in Connectimals. They had a couple of titles prior to their involvement in Roller Coaster Tycoon, but their first involvement with Roller Coaster Tycoon was with the Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 expansions. And like I said, I thought those expansions were really well done. Again, like, not much to say differently from my experience with 1, except that this is, if I want to go back and specifically play vintage Roller Coaster Tycoon, I will go to 2 over 1. I love the scenarios. I love the scenario editor. We should make a buoy scenario. That would be fun.
Oh, like, yeah, that would.
Park buoy. Although I'd rather do it in, like, a, you know, more modern park creator sim. But you were saying, Captain Spike, that you really, this is where the franchise really clicked for you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I found the user interface more intuitive. I felt like there was more options, you know, a much greater just, like, freedom of what you can do. Also, the fact that, you know, at this point, Theme Park was so outdated that I couldn't really play it anymore.
Uh-huh.
So I sort of had to move on. That having been said, you know, I don't really get into the scenario type stuff as much as you do. I'm not really into, like, create a park and have a, you know, excitement rating of 4.25 on 2 coasters or more. It's not really how I like to play this game. This is one of those rare things for me, these coaster games. Like, I just want a giant park with awesome roller coasters that I get to design. So I typically play in, like, whatever sandbox options these games have, and that way I can just go ham with creativity.
Yeah. That being said, did you not have fun that one time a few years ago that I was over? You know, I mean, of course I'm over all the time because we podcast all the time. But remember that time when you were making a park? Well, you were playing the scenario.
It was the park
that,
in Hades,
yeah, it was
right?
The park in Hades, and there was lava, and you had to design coasters that had, like, an excitement rating. So even though you don't usually do that, didn't you have fun making the Hades park?
I did have a tremendous amount of fun with the Hades park. I will give you that one.
So a little side note about Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 is that Eurogamer had a great interview with Chris Sawyer earlier this year, back in March, and, you know, Chris Sawyer kind of disappeared for a very long time, and we'll kind of talk about some of the things that happened with Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. So Chris Sawyer actually wants to rebuild Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 for mobile platforms, so he's been kind of trying to work on that and, you know, kind of rebuild it from the ground up. So that would be really cool. I would definitely, if, you know, if it is Chris involved, and, you know, the recreation of this. I liked Roller Coaster Tycoon 2 a lot. You can play it-ish on new computers, but, you know, old games kind of can be a little fickle.
I haven't had any problems playing it on my current PC, but I got it from Good Old Games.
Yeah,
and they
here.
Typically perform whatever tweaks need to be made to play it.
Yeah, so you could also put it in your Steam library too, so which is excellent.
Yeah, I just because usually like the specific like download package from Good Old Games has whatever fixes you need, so that's why I typically go that route for older games like that.
So yeah, as far as playing it, you can still purchase it for just a couple of bucks. Coaster Tycoon 3 was the next game in the franchise, released on October 26, 2004. And this is where the game in the franchise really took some major shifts. Chris Sawyer only served as a consultant on this title, and instead, Frontier Developments was the one who really took the development. You know, they had really started to get involved heavily in the expansions for 2, as I mentioned. And so this is where Frontier really kind of had their chance to really make their own Roller Coaster Tycoon. And so this version, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, was published by Atari. So, and it's honestly very difficult for me to keep track of what happened to Atari. But what my understanding is that, so we started out with MicroProse. Hasbro Interactive had bought out MicroProse, and they had also bought out whatever holding company had Atari at that point. So basically, this was still the company known as Infogrames, but they decided to rebrand themselves as Atari, which was totally unrelated to the old Atari that, you know, we think of back in the olden days. So when you hear Atari and Roller Coaster Tycoon, it's not really the same Atari. So that's a story for another day. So Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 had 2 expansions, Soaked and Wild. Soaked had water park elements. You could have pools and water slides, not just like the log ride and the dinghy ride. There was like actual like water park, like, you know, which is something that at least out in California is pretty popular to have water parks paired with the theme parks. And then Wild had wild animals, which again, you know, we have Marine World, which, you know, now is a Six Flags park and is not really an animal park anymore, but, you know, definitely was kind of a big thing out here as well. And then possibly other parts of the world. I can't speak for anywhere else. One of the big changes was that this was in a 3D sort of environment and not an isometric gameplay anymore. There was the scenarios in career mode, and these scenarios had 3 different levels: Apprentice, Entrepreneur, and Tycoon. And each, so you could have like a scenario set in the desert, and there'd be 3 different goals. So like after you reach the Apprentice goal, you would go on for the Entrepreneur goal. So it kind of gave you incentive to keep working with your same park after the, you know, scenario had actually finished, if you think of it in the old way. And then of course there is the sandbox mode where you can just go hog wild. There were lots of cool things like the coaster cam, which gives you a first-person view, and there was a really sophisticated like fireworks and in-game music sort of. It's called the Mixmaster, and you can do some like
Mix
pretty
Master
amazing
Mike.
Firework shows. If you go on YouTube, you search for like Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 Disney fireworks. Like, people have recreated like some of the Disney fireworks shows. It's crazy. There's more sophistication with the guests. They kind of show up in different groups and have, you know, different age groups and preferences and a day-night cycle. And so, like, it really, you know, added a lot of different features. You know, definitely was a big jump forward visually. You can kind of, like, rotate around as much as you want. You could really do a lot of cool stuff with terraforming. For me, it's interesting because I recognize that, you know, Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 is a really solid game, but for me, I still think that almost 2 is kind of where my heart still is.
And, you know, I would agree with that, even though obviously 3 is fantastic. And, you know, I've gained a greater appreciation for it over the years, playing it more recently. At the time, though, some of the things they tweaked and changed to me, it made like coaster creation and customization to me a little less flexible. And that for me was, you know, such a major draw of what I get out of these games that I actually sort of harbored a grudge against 3 for quite some time that I've only really in recent years sort of gotten past and gotten over.
Yeah, and as a 12-year-old game at this point, I mean, you can crank it up pretty high and it looks pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So still definitely worthwhile. And, you know, Frontier really did do a great job on it. And, you know, it really reinvented the series. And, you know, when we talk about Planet Coaster really is like Roller Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 too. But what happened with, this is where the story kind of starts to get a little sad. In November of 2005, Chris Sawyer sued Atari for not paying him royalties. They later settled out of court in 2008, but it kind of hasn't been the same since. And after Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, Frontier kind of went on and started doing their own thing, which we'll talk about very shortly. So this is where the story starts to get a little sad, like I said. As far as Roller Coaster Tycoon, the franchise, there was not another new title until Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D, which was a 3DS title. And it was released on October 16th, 2012. Now, this was developed by N-Space.
Which is wild because, you know, N-Space has done a lot of good.
Yeah, but it was just really poorly received. It kind of was a big step down for a lot of people. I had held off on waiting to see how it was reviewed. It is 39 out of 100 on Metacritic. And, you know, you can't always go on game reviews, but you know, it was pretty universally agreed that this game was very, very poorly designed. And so, unfortunately, you know, did not do well to revitalize the brand.
Yeah, well, you know, the graphics took a gigantic hit. It was sort of almost designed as like a Roller Coaster Tycoon 2.5. So it has like some of the features from 3, but not all of them. It just ended up being really sloppy. It felt unfinished, really. The graphics were not very good. And it just, overall, it was just a mess. And it's the kind of thing where it's like, I really feel like with another 6 months in the oven, it could have been something great, but we'll never know.
Especially as a 3DS title, like, ooh, look at your rights in 3D.
Aw, dude, that would have been so cool.
Yeah. So after the failure that was Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D, you know, a lot of us were hoping that, you know, hey, Roller Coaster Tycoon 4 could happen one day. When Roller Coaster Tycoon 4 came, it was Roller Coaster Tycoon 4 Mobile, released on April 10th, 2014, and originally only for iOS, later for Android, in October of that year. It was developed by On5 Games, which I don't know a lot about them, aside from the fact that they're a mobile studio. It is an isometric game, but what really killed this game for a lot of people, and what turned me away from it, is that it's a freemium game. It's a mobile social game. You know, and we kind of poke fun at the mobile social thing, but, you know, that and the complete absence of Chris Sawyer being involved, lots of microtransactions, and wait times, not wait times for a ride, like wait times for, you know, things to recharge, a la mobile social.
Yeah, you know, I played this. They did patch it up quite a bit, as I understand it, about, like 6 months after release, in order to reduce some of that, but initially, the wait times were, like, punishingly long. Like, you would try to even just like construct a basic ride and it was like, oh yeah, well you're either going to have like 10 friends click on this and help, not really 10, but like 4 or something, or else this ride won't even be active for several hours. And it's just like, this is so awful. Like it takes all of the ideas of Roller Coaster Tycoon and like places them where they should be, but then completely flubs the execution. I tried to get into this, but I just couldn't. It's a mess. Eurogamer had called it irredeemably bad quite famously, giving it a 1 out of 10 rating. And this is one of those few times where like I'm seeing that unbridled negativity and it's like, I completely agree. Like this game is a mess. They absolutely ruined what was otherwise a really good idea. This could have really been something,
especially
if not for that.
A touch interface, you know, was actually like really makes a lot of sense for a coaster park sim.
Dude, right? Like honestly, if they just made this game, but as a for sale product, like a one-time purchase rather than microtransaction based.
And that's what I feel like Chris Sawyer's probably trying to do. So this somehow got a worse Metacritic score than Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D. And so, you know, as we were alluding to earlier, it's just really unfortunate that, you know, the brand name of Roller Coaster Tycoon really at this point had been tarnished. So there was one more glimmer of hope when Roller Coaster Tycoon World was announced. As we mentioned, that was announced at Gamescom 2014. It was originally going to be developed by Pipeworks, and they had done a couple of interesting projects. They did like the boot, like what do you call that? The boot, the
loader,
the boot loader, the boot ROM for the Xbox and the Xbox 360. They had done some Godzilla games, some crossword games, a Night at the Museum Battle of the Smithsonian game. Their most popular game for that I'm aware of was Deadliest Warrior the Game, which was based on the Spike TV documentary Deadliest Warrior. And so, you know, didn't really have any experience in Coaster Sims, but hey, you know, Frontier hadn't had any experience in Coaster Sims before that. And, you know, they did a good job with the two expansions and all of three. So there was hope that Pipeworks was going to do a good job and that wasn't just a pipe dream. Unfortunately, the development of Roller Coaster Tycoon World was very troubled. Ended up being switched to Area 52 Games, which I was not really familiar with anything that they had done. And then eventually finished being developed by Envizio Games, which had done only some Facebook-y and mobile-y sort of games. And so, you know, this was a very lofty sort of, or an ambitious sort of title. You know, they wanted to have, you know, be able to go do online co-op, which I was like, oh, that would be awesome. You know, we could both run Park Buoy and, you know, I control the Space Land and you control the Pirate Land or whatever, you know. Like, so it seemed like it would be really cool and try to kind of make up for the, you know, the poorly received for mobile and 3D. Unfortunately, this went on early access earlier this year and just was really, felt really unfinished, really, you know, for something that had been in changing development so much, it just was really not polished at all. And then we just got the, like, just earlier this month, like, very, very shortly, like, not a lot of notice, Atari decided to release this on November 16th, which was a day before Planet Coaster's release. So, I mean, the Steam reviews are still terrible. Part of me wants to give it a chance. But, I mean, also part of me is like, it's $34.99, and there's other games that I want to be playing this month. You know, Final Fantasy 15 is coming out. And it's just, it's really hard for me to have a lot of faith that Roller Coaster Tycoon World is going to pull it together. You know, I really haven't seen a lot of reviews out yet, as opposed to Planet Coaster. Like, you do a search for Roller Coaster Tycoon World reviews, at least a couple days ago, and it was all like Planet Coaster. So what do you think, Captain Spike? Are you going to give this one a try?
You know, I will at some point. My biggest problem is, you know, between Planet Coaster and Parkitect, I feel like my needs and tastes are being served.
Yeah.
You know, I gave Tycoon 3D a chance. I gave Tycoon 4 Mobile a chance.
You did more than I did. Yeah.
So now with World, it's like everything I've read has been mostly unpleasant. I mean, I have seen some user reviews that have been, you know, like 3.5 stars, 2.5 stars, which, I mean, I'll play games in that range. So, you know, I'm interested in seeing how the game grows, how it gets patched, you know, but at least for now, my problem is the things that it's getting dinged on, stuff like, I guess the coaster builder doesn't have enough options, the ride animations seem like really unfleshed out, sort of half-baked. Like, for me, those are things that mean a lot for me in these experiences.
Yeah, part of the immersion, you know, and I really question Atari's decision to rush this out of early access, or even to honestly put it in early access in the first place, so.
You know, and I'm okay with the early access release. I don't love it for these games that should be bigger releases necessarily, but the fact that they took it out of early access the day before Planet Coaster's release, and Planet Coaster, like, already feels like a full complete game, and Roller Coaster Tycoon World, based on the streams I've watched, based on the reviews I've read, it just doesn't. It does seem like they rushed it to market, and I think that is just really sad, because, you know, I think we would all give them the benefit of the doubt if it stayed in early access while they continued to work on it and fix it.
Right.
But pushing it out the door is practically a vote of no confidence.
I was totally willing for it to have some more time in the oven and was going to double dip, but, you know, it just, like, I still, even with the changing of hands of development, I still held out hope that, you know, they were gonna pull through. But that's why, you know, Roller Coaster Tycoon, as, you know, that specific brand, is really just not a really a lot of brand loyalty. It's lost a lot of, you know, its dedicated fans because we've just been feeling burnt over the recent offerings. And I think it's just unfortunate that Infogrames / Atari just kind of hasn't figured out what to do with it or who found the right talent to, you know, do this type of game successfully. So it's just, it's a real bummer because, you know, I think back to, you know, the days of Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 and 2 and, you know, what was successful there is that, you know, it was Chris Sawyer and then Frontier is what made those games successful. It wasn't the Atari name. So it's just, you know, maybe the world will come around, but, you know, other than that, that's where our kind of starting to wind down is looking at some other notable coaster sims. And Frontier had an interesting journey on its way to Planet Coaster. So, you know, they were involved in the expansions for 2. They were involved in all of 3. After that, they did occasionally return to dabble in theme parky sorts of things. In November of 2006, in fact, November 21st, 2006, happy 10th birthday to Thrillville for the PS2 and PSP. This was built around the idea of building a theme park. There were some mini games, and, you know, so it was kind of meant to be something in the vein of Roller Coaster Tycoon. To me, never quite hit the same marks. I remember it had KT Tunstall on the soundtrack. That was cool. It was like, yeah. Suddenly I see. So, like, that was cool. There was a sequel, Thrillville Off the Rails, which was a PSP, Wii, PC, PS2, 360, and DS title, which was released on October 16th, 2007. I know that I feel like I got you Thrillville, like, as a birthday gift that year or something. I remember we were sitting here in what's now the SS Game Buoy, your room, and, like, we were playing it. So, I mean, what were your experiences with Thrillville?
I thought it was fun. It was kind of a little basic, but, I mean, I enjoyed my time with it. I didn't dislike it.
Yeah.
My biggest problem is that, you know, it was a console. I was playing it on a console, and
right.
I prefer to play these kinds of games on PC, so...
And, you know, I've had the same experience with, like, there was a version of The Sims that was on one of the consoles, and it just felt weird. So, yeah, it, like, didn't quite work for me, but, you know, wasn't by any means, like, terrible. Just didn't quite scratch that itch for me. And then, you know, as we mentioned, Frontier kind of did a lot of different other things from that point on. They did Kinectimals. They did Kinect Disneyland Adventures, which, you know, kind of theme parky in some ways. They did the Zoo Tycoon.
It's literally a Disneyland game. You're, like, kind of theme parky in some ways.
Yeah, but it wasn't really, like, a theme park sim, you know.
Yeah, you know, I follow. I'm just giving you a hard time.
It wasn't the game that involved Disneyland and Frontier that I was hoping for when I found out about it.
Fair.
They did that Zoo Tycoon that was pretty well received with Microsoft. But then, like I said, Elite Dangerous is, you know, and the Elite Dangerous series has been kind of, you know, their biggest recent success. In 2015, they revisited the world of coasters. They did have Coaster Crazy for iOS, which I didn't really know a lot about. But we had Scream Ride in 2015 for Xbox One and Xbox 360. And that was just more about the goal of building a wild and wacky roller coaster that has, like, the most scream rating. I remember you played the demo of this, and that was my only experience, was watching you play the demo. Did you have any other experience besides that with Scream Ride?
You know, I haven't. I played the demo. It was something, and it did not make me want to buy the game. Even though I have heard reviewers call it a spiritual successor to Roller Coaster Tycoon, like, based on that demo, I did not care to find out.
Yeah, it was just more about, like, creating, like, very extreme coasters from what I remember of the demo. And then
one of the modes mode. Using it to, like, blow stuff up. Which, like, this isn't what I'm looking for.
Which is funny, but, you know, it's not, definitely not a spiritual successor in my eyes. So, thankfully, Frontier pulled through and announced Planet Coaster in January of 2015, officially revealing it with, you know, the first trailers at the PC Gaming Show at E3 2015. And I just was, that's where my, you know, heart started to swell, because, you know, I thought, you know, Frontier is gonna make it right again. And so they had a very long beta that you could purchase, like not really, like, kind of an early access thing, but, you know, it was a buy-in beta, I guess. And so I did not do that, but I did do the kind of like the Thrill Seeker edition, which gave you about a week or two of access to that beta, and now it's been out for a few days. I've only started to scratch the surface. My PC kind of struggles to run
it. It's actually below the min spec for it, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, this is really, you know, when you push it to its max, a beautiful game, and it's just immense levels of customization, buildings. It's just, it is fantastic. I've, you know, only dabbled in it a little bit. The interface is, I'm still getting used to a little bit, you know, about, like, building paths and stuff. So there's a little bit of a learning curve as far as, you know, coming from 3 to rural, to, sorry, Planet Coaster. But, I mean, just overall, fantastic, you know, the different things that you can do with theming and just really making an immersive experience. I've only just started to scratch the surface. I love these types of games so much that the fact that Planet Coaster is the one that's finally getting my PC to struggle a bit. And my PC can run Final Fantasy 14 pretty well, you know. The fact that Planet Coaster is the one that's pushing it, I'm like, okay, I will upgrade my box for Planet Coaster. That's,
yes,
that's how much I love these sorts of games, and how even just having only scratched the surface, I can tell that Frontier's done it again. I mean, it is very much Roller Coaster Tycoon 3. The scenarios are, you know, three different. There's a bronze, silver, and gold star, and so it's very much the same sort of in that mode. There's a sandbox, and then like a challenge mode, which is kind of sandboxy, but gives you like, you know, certain parameters. So the other cool thing is that it ties into the Steam Workshop. So something that's always been really huge with these games, at least starting with 2, is that you can, you know, upload your track designs online. I remember downloading a bunch of like custom tracks and stuff. So that's always been a huge part of the fan community, and having a Steam Workshop just make it that much easier to share and find creations just is like makes it perfect, you know, perfect implementation. Apparently Roller Coaster Tycoon World also has Steam Workshop, but you know, if the coaster design tool is not that great, then I haven't played a lot with the coaster design tool itself, you know custom rides, you know, but definitely a little bit of a learning curve in terms of like, you know, oh, I used to be able to just hit this button in Roller Coaster Tycoon and it did that. So I'm still kind of in the learning phase, but there's just so much that it's already hitting the right notes for me that I'm just absolutely delighted.
That's
awesome. You had a chance to pick it up yet?
You know, I have downloaded it, but I haven't played it yet.
Oh man, part of me is going to tempt you to get it installing while we...
I have it installed already.
Oh, well, I might have to pressure you to load it up and crank up those graphics and see how beautiful it looks. So, well done to Frontier, you know, for really, I believe this is the spiritual successor. Now, that does not detract at all from the joy of what Parkitect is becoming. This is, you know, still in development, early access, had a very successful Kickstarter. It is a Canadian indie studio called Texel Raptor.
I backed it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been on early access since May 2016. It definitely still has some room to grow, but it is a complete labor of love that is immediately accessible to anyone who's played Roller Coaster Tycoon 1 or 2. So the thing that I think is perfect about this is that we have Roller Coaster Tycoon 3 lives on with Planet Coaster, and Tycoon 1 and 2 is going to live on with Parkitect. And of course, Parkitect, you know, much easier on system specs, you know, and I already have just had a lot of fun, you know, exploring what they keep adding to the game. You know, lots of things like swing rides, which there wasn't a swing ride, you know, the swings that go around in the original game. So I'm just like, I love that there's so many things that we never got to see from the original games that the creative minds at Texel Raptor are doing.
Absolutely.
So I'm definitely looking forward to the continued development of that. You know, we'll definitely keep you posted on the, you know, when it gets closer to an official release.
Yep.
And to wrap it up, it's kind of is funny because this is really, this, like Captain Spike was saying, was the first really successful theme park sim, which was Theme Park by Bullfrog Productions, published by EA in 1994, from the mind of Peter Molyneux. You know, he is a visionary. You know, a lot of people like to poke fun at him, but I mean, he really is, you know, one of the visionaries of gaming. Captain Spike, what was it about Theme Park that drew you in? Because this was a little before my time.
Well, when I played it back in the 90s, it was just like, you know, I was familiar with Sim City, familiar with even like Sim Earth, I think. So, you know, the whole idea of these sim games otherwise, though, was still largely untapped. Simulation games, as we know them now, they weren't even really a thing yet. I mean, you know, they were becoming a thing, certainly, but not to just, you know, rando kid gamers. So I played Theme Park because I have a friend whose father worked at Bullfrog Productions.
Oh, wow.
So he had a bunch of Bullfrog games that I had never seen before.
Did your friend's dad know Peter Molyneux personally?
You know, I don't know because I didn't know who that was at the time.
Oh.
Yeah. So
I guess so. He kind of hadn't really become quite the famous person we know today.
And, you know, I do have to say, I say that he worked at Bullfrog, and that's really like, it's kind of a patchy memory because we're talking about stuff that happened 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
He may have worked at EA and just happened to have all of these Bullfrog games.
Yeah, Bullfrog was over in Britain, right?
I think so. But, you know, that was how I got my introduction to
Bullfrog games. Yeah.
Theme Park, Magic Carpet, Syndicate, Populous, you know, and I would go over there and play these games all the time. And the thing that got me particularly about Theme Park was that, you know, there's a real sense of humor to it. It's all just kind of very silly, very fun. You do all this cool creation stuff. It was just a very positive experience. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I would say that my love for all sim games, Sim City, all of it probably ties back to how many fun summer days my buddy and I spent playing, making these bullshit theme parks. It was really cool. It was super intuitive. The gameplay loop of, you know, build a ride, make some money, build another ride, you know, build your various pathways to your ride. You know, it just was very fulfilling even then. And it remains to me very addictive even now. Like while we're recording this episode, you're talking about all these games. I'm like, okay, which of these games am I going to play tonight?
That's awesome. So it was followed by Theme Park World.
Oh, I also just want to give a quick shout out. There's actually a fairly decent port of Theme Park on the original DS.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I got mine at Fry's on clearance for like $5.99.
Oh, that's really cool.
It's actually like a pretty well implemented game. Uses the touch screen for some stuff. It's overall a good port, even though it's lacking some features that even the PC release had 20 years ago, but it's still mostly full featured. Anyway, you can continue.
I was just going to say it was followed by Theme Park World, which had its release in the States as Sim Theme Park, because of course EA had the Sim branding pretty big. It also had a PS2 release apparently as Theme Park Roller Coaster. So this was in 1999. Of course, PS2 port came later. And having not played this, I can't really speak to what was new. It was followed by the final franchise, Theme Park Inc. or Sim Coaster in the U.S. This was in 19. I'm sorry. This was in not 1999. This was 2000. So again, just kind of seemed to build on the other versions. Did you have experience with the sequels?
You know, I actually don't. I would like to get into them now that I think about it.
Sim Coaster Theme Park Inc. introduced a roller coaster editor, so you could do
interesting,
like including log flumes and stuff. Of course. So
are those on Good Old Games or anything?
I don't know. I honestly, since the original theme park was a little before my time, and you know, both of these were kind of simultaneous with Roller Coaster Tycoon, the two sequels. I kind of have never really investigated, but it would be worth looking into. So with that, I want to go ahead and wrap this up and kind of want to know what you think about, because we talked about that I would describe this as a hopeful revival of the genre. So what do you think about kind of the state of the genre for Coaster Park Sims? You know, we kind of talked about the fact that the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise itself is a little bit troubled, and it's in fact why Frontier decided to not even use the word tycoon in Planet Coaster. Like they just, the tycoon brand had been so damaged by the poor releases in the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise. So what's your kind of your state of the theme park sim genre?
Well, I think that because there's two questions you just asked, even if you don't realize it. So my thoughts on Roller Coaster Tycoon as an IP and its current status, very low value right now. I think Atari had a real opportunity, whoever's calling themselves Atari these days,
yeah,
had a very real opportunity opportunity with Roller Coaster Tycoon World to revitalize the brand. And that, to me, is why I'm so disappointed that they treated it the way they did, because I think that this brand, unless they get it patched quickly, they get it fixed, it turns into like a joyous release. Otherwise, I think that IP is dead. I think it will be beyond recovery at this point. As far as the current state of the theme park sim as a genre, though, very positive. I think that Parkitect and Planet Coaster show there is a real thirst and hunger for this kind
of
content.
People love these games.
People
so
love
much.
These games. They just want a good fucking game to play in this genre. And that we have both Parkitect and Planet Coaster, that they're both very good in different ways, to me is actually overall a benefit, because it shows that not only is there a real market for this genre, there's a market for multiple experiences in this genre. Having the sort of super intense, detail-focused Planet Coaster and the more like lighthearted focus on just like the park building stuff of Parkitect, they can both coexist. And that's why it's really unfathomable to me that Atari would prioritize a quick dollar over really trying to make some long-term money and investment in this genre that they, by rights, should be really absolutely profiting from.
Yeah, it's just such a shame.
Absolutely. So that's my over-opinionated answer that you didn't entirely ask for.
No, that was perfect, and I largely agree that, you know, reading the best of both worlds, it'll be interesting to see if EA gets their foot back in the game. And again, you know, interestingly, EA kind of having had a bit of a rocky path with some of their sim games. Not necessarily the Sims, but, you know, SimCity definitely had its drama. So I think that if they were to revisit theme park, it would definitely have to be with the right talent, which is what I think the big problem with Atari is over these past few years. And my last question for you is, what is your hope for the future of the genre? You know, if this is a true revival, as we hope it is, where do you see it going next? Or what would just be your kind of your dream?
You know, so the thing I love about Planet Coaster, based on all of the pre-release streams of it I watched, is that, you know, I love that you can like really go like deep into the details. You can really design like every facet of your ride. You can do the little ride along and literally design what the insides of like your little caverns and what have you on
your
ride are
going to
look
like. You couldn't really do that experience in even like 2 and 3, like for your like haunted house or whatever.
Yeah, no, not to this degree, certainly. Like, you can place actors, you can place, you know, various little props and designs, and really like create your own themed ride that is wholly unique to your experience in the style of like a Disneyland ride or a Great America ride or a Six Flags ride. So it's deeply impressive to me. Parkitect, you know, again, a little bit more of a larger focus on sort of the old style. What I would like to see is for that to continue, really. I hope both of these products are very successful. I hope we get, you know, indie devs start looking at this and seeing what the indie groups can bring. I want to see, when I say indie, I mean smaller groups, because obviously both of these devs are indie themselves. You know, I just want to see more, basically. Now that we have, you know, to me, proof that this can exist, not only these games can exist, but multiple visions of these games can exist. I just want to see more, because I will support all of the good ones, truly. And I'm still hoping, even against hope, that Atari can get its head out of its butt and get Roller Coaster Tycoon World fixed.
Yeah.
Make it the game it deserves to be, because there is room in the marketplace for it.
I'm going to add on two things, because I'm right there with you with my hopes. I think VR and coasters are a match made in heaven.
Match made in heaven.
So I believe that there are a couple of projects here and there that are, you know, kind of trying to explore that. I know there was like an Oculus coaster demo or something that I was reading about. And my biggest dream has always been a well-designed Disney theme park sim. Like, if they did it right, of course, you know, Disney games can be a very drastically varying quality. But I've always dreamed of a make-your-own Disneyland wherever, you know, like, you know, there's so many Disney parks now that, like, oh, so, like, I'm gonna straight up put Space Mountain in my Disney theme park, but I'm also going to do this, you know? Like, I mean, because Disney is the theme park. Like, you know, I mean, some people are, you know, more about the fast coasters and the biggest coasters, but for me, Disney is what puts the theme in theme park, and I'm still holding out for Disney. Like, you know, hopefully, I mean, even if, like, Frontier, if they were like, hey, we really have been watching what Frontier has done, and, like, they paired up with Frontier, I mean, that would just, that'd be it for me.
It's so funny that you say this. First off, unfortunately, because of how protective of their brand Disney is, I doubt we'll ever see this. You know, I get the feeling that Disney's a kind of company that they wouldn't want even like a Space Mountain that you had like edited somehow. I don't think they would want that. Like if you were to like,
I'd be okay,
I'm
going
to take
this
to the nth degree so you can understand.
Yeah.
If they released a Disney themed game like this and you made a Space Mountain, but in that opening part where you're getting the narration and you're like flying off into space with the lights on the side or whatever, that would, on day one, someone would hack that so that you were entering Goatsy, and Disney would never.
Also, like the parts about like there's guests are complaining about too much vomit, you know, like,
yeah,
Disney works so hard to make
that
behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, there's I do not believe the kind of game you want would ever exist, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a downer, but the cool thing is I guarantee you if it's not up already a month from now, you will absolutely,
oh, yeah,
be able to download like beautiful detailed recreations of Disney rides for Planet Coaster.
People,
I'm 100% sure.
People really pushed 3 to the limits with what they tried to do
well,
for Disney. Just,
yeah, and you look at what the tool sets are now, dude, this is going to be a thing for sure.
Yeah, so I'm ready for that.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, with that, it's time to wind down this episode. Kind of come down the corkscrew back to the station.
All right.
Gosh, I love roller coasters and I love Coaster Sims.
Me too.
Thank you for indulging me, Captain Spike.
And you know, you've wanted to do this episode for so long. And
this is just the right time to do it, I think.
It is. I agree. And you know what? For all of the trouble I've given you over the years that you've been pitching this episode, you did good.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well,
all right. So time for some rumors.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So we have a rumor from Eurogamer, and you know that in itself should tell you that
we buy it
that there is going to be Pokemon Stars codename, which is going to be the Yellow, Crystal, Emerald, Platinum, you know, third game for Sun and Moon coming to the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, and you know, I believe this for a lot of reasons. First off, we already have had tons of indications from all of our prime Nintendo Switch leakers that Pokemon something is coming.
We know for a fact that Game Freak is working on a Switch game.
We know that they are working on a Switch game, for sure. We know that the Pokemon models in Sun and Moon already are, first off, ridiculously high poly counts. We already know that. But furthermore, because Pokemon fans are crazy people, and I do not mean any ableism when I say this, I mean this is like not an acceptable, reasonable thing to do, people have like isolated that in like the original preview video of Sun and Moon, like the announced video, there's like a quick shot of a Pikipek's,
yep,
like wireframe,
yep,
poly model, and the Pokemon fans have noted that is a significantly higher poly count model than the one that appears in the game. So you know, I guess the thought is, you know, one of those things where, you know, you smell smoke, there's probably a fire somewhere. There are just too many little details lining up. This is almost certainly a thing. And I'm super into it. You know, give me a third version a year from release so that next November, I'm again caught up in Pokemania. I want that.
Yeah.
Give that to me.
And my thing is that, as we talked about on our latest episode of Stabcast,
Stabcast.org.
This game is just such a step forward that, you know, I think when people were saying they want a fully 3D JRPG, I mean, it's pretty much there, honestly.
Yeah, this Sun Moon, and you know, I'm going to talk about this during my What's Up, but it is, for all intents and purposes, absolutely just a PS2 era JRPG.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we're kind of there, and I think that, you know, a lot of people thought that, you know, oh, Pokemon on a home console just wouldn't work. But, I mean, Switch is kind of trying to...
bridge the gap.
Bridge that gap. So, I mean, I think it's...
this would be a good game for it to bridge the gap with, too.
Because, I mean, so many of us do play Pokemon at home, but, you know, it's also on the go, and its portability is part of, you know, Pocket Monsters, you know, so...
Indeed. So the idea of getting best of both worlds, to me, this is, again, this is the prime candidate for the kind of game that would benefit from the Switch's hybrid nature.
Yeah, I mean, I figured that we would get it for Gen 8, but I mean, if we get it next year, holiday season, Pokemon Stars, I'm so ready.
Well, yeah, and you know, there are a couple of other big Switch games rumored that I totally believe because of who's leaking these rumors, and that is stuff like Xenoblade Chronicles X port. That is, there is apparently an Ubisoft-developed Rayman Mario crossover RPG coming. The thing is, like, a lot of these rumors, like, on their own, it's like, as if. But these people who are saying these things have been 100% spot on their rumor reporting previously. So I'm inclined to believe, and I'm really excited for it. That having been said, we are going to skip the intro song. We're going to dip right into what's up here, because I want to continue the Pokemon conversation. Clearly, Slaggy and I both have played a lot of Pokemon. I've already bought 2 copies, 1 Japanese Sun, North American Moon.
That's been a while since you've double-dipped, huh?
It has been, yeah. But it really speaks to how good Pokemon Sun and Moon is. So, Slaggy, I'd like to hear from you. What are your thoughts on Pokemon Sun Moon?
I'm basically already about 20 hours in. X and Y was already a really great game, but I mean, it's just, this is just, you know, I'm just gonna say, like, all of the changes they did, like, you know, taking out the gyms, it's a great experience. It's very just the world. I love the world of Alola. I've really become engaged in it more than, you know, like Hoenn or Sinnoh, or I mean, even Kalos, which, you know, had a lot of charm and personality. You know, it's just like there was so much love put into this game, and, you know, so much polish, and they really, you know, I think they really worked hard to, you know, take it to the next level while still keeping, you know, still a Pokemon game, gotta catch them all, trainers, you know. So, like, I think it's a great way to bring it to the next 20 years of Pokemon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And other than that, I've just been playing Planet Coaster, so.
Excellent.
Go ahead and share your thoughts on.
Well, you know, I, like I said, absolutely just a PS2 era JRPG, and I mean that in the best sense of the word. I am just absolutely impressed by the sort of story first focus, sort of the world building they do on Alola, the graphics, and even like the camera angles and the way the story is told. It is just, I mean, it's throwback at this point, I guess, but it still feels so fresh and like such a step forward to Pokemon. I have no reservations about saying this is the best Pokemon has ever been.
Yep.
And I'm completely impressed. I thought it would be good. I did not realize it was going to be this. Like, I couldn't possibly speak enough good things about Pokemon Sun and Moon. I did have a couple of other games I played this week, though. I have been playing Overwatch again due to the release of Sombra.
Boop.
I have been enjoying it so much. Sombra is effing everything. That kind of like control class is definitely one that I really enjoy in these kinds of competitive games. You know, I'm going to get into your abilities and remove your ability to use them. That's definitely my jam. Super into it. And I still love Overwatch. I think it's a great game. I also played a lot of Final Fantasy 15 Judgment Disc. What this is a Japanese exclusive demo of the final version of Final Fantasy 15, only the first chapter. The way I had read online that it was sort of explained was that it's sort of like the first disc preview of the game for gamers to pass their judgment on the Final Fantasy 15 project. Hence the name Judgment Disc. I don't know if that's correct or not. I read it on, I think, Gaff or something, but it definitely clicked for me, and I want to believe that's why it's called that. Either way, I think it's an amazing game. I am so excited for Final 15 now. Somehow, against the odds, despite all possibility and probability to the contrary, I think they pulled it off, and I think Final Fantasy 15 is going to be amazing.
I'm so excited. I've been waiting 10 years.
Right? You've bought consoles for this and sold them and rebought them. Like, this has been like a 10-year voyage for you as a fan. So, anyway, just really excited for Final 15 now. And, dude, by the time we record next, unless we do a surprise episode next week, which is possible, otherwise, by the time we record next, we will have have 15 in our hands.
Oh, boy.
Right? That blows my damn mind.
I'd like to have a Gladio body pillow in my hands, too.
All right.
Please hit me up if you find any.
Ah, will do. All right. Well, unless you have any other games to talk about, let's wrap this up.
All right. Our social links question of the week is, this week we talk about the downfall of the once great Roller Coaster Tycoon series. What has been your personal experience with RCT? Bonus questions. Do you have any thoughts on the other theme park sims, old or new? So we got a tweet from Your Enzyme saying, has there been a downfall or did they just lose popularity over the years? I know there's a resurgence in the genre lately. I haven't played an RCT since the second one. It's been a very long time. I remember having fun building parks with my sis, smiley face. Aw. So hopefully we have taught you a new thing or two, Your Enzyme. And also, hopefully you will be interested in picking up one of the new revivals. Hopefully Planet Coaster and Parkitect. So definitely.
I'm Team Parkitect, even though I do think Planet Coaster is amazing.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, Planet Coaster is the one that is officially out and fully functioning, so.
Well, shut up.
And not related to question of the week, but very adorable. We got a photo from Amiru69 saying, feeding the ducks while listening to GameBuoy.org. Good times. Those adorable ducks. For those of you who don't know, I mean, I'm not trying to spread everything about Amiru's private life, but he lives on a farm and has the sweetest animals. And so I melt every time.
Sup, Little Link.
Yeah, Little Link and just all of the little cuties. And so I'm glad that Game Buoy is a source of joy on the farm along with those adorable animals. With that, we love your feedback. We like your iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher Radio ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter. We effing do.
We effing do.
And you can mail us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org. So with that, it's time for our shoutouts.
Of course, and you may be listening to us here now, but you should check out the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can catch such shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO. Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. The Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based. Last but not least on the VOG ship is the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd be remiss not to mention Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, and their lovable sister show X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Last and least is Reading is Fundamental.
Rude.
Slag Kicks Project, featuring myself, Rude. Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness, talking about the current season of the RuPaul's Drag Race meta
series. I hope you just say least because it's not currently airing right now.
Exactly so. Slaggy, take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Purry Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Video Game Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, a La Palanca podcast, podcast por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español, and Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. I would be remiss not to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. Really given a similar vibe to the things that we love over here. Always talking about import stuff on Twitter with those folks, and love them. And of course, I'd like to direct you to Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. We're going to be doing an Escaflowne episode.
Yes.
With the recently released Blu-rays over here and new dub. And of course, Pokemon is bigger than ever, and we've got...
And better than ever.
And better than ever, and we've got your twice-monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon over at the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast. That's stabcast.org for short. You know how we love our .orgs over here on the Buoy Fleet. So go check us out along with Trainer Sulker. We just have our latest episode up today. Sun and Moon First Impressions. Talking about that first island and just the joy of Alola.
Alola.
Alola. Of course, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately closed down quite a while back, but will forever be pouring out a 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain. It's more of a witch than a great fairy. I've got to work my great fairy laugh. They can't be good at things that fairies do.
All right. Well, with all that having been said, it has been a true pleasure to talk to all y'all out there in Internet Radio Land today. I hope you have had half as much fun listening as we have had talking. We will be back at you in a couple of weeks with more exciting stuff. But until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and Shin Theme Park.
I want to get off of Mr. Bone's Wild Ride.
I'm sure you do. Mics are hot. Speak in your mic for me.
The girl who got an eyebrow weave.
I don't believe that was ever a real episode, but it looks like we are, in fact, recording.
Look at Courtney contestant, though. Bam!